Welcome to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, where it's all about slashing your debt and taxes and creating a liberated lifestyle. And now, your host, with a love of fantasy books and funk, and a hatred of running more than 3 miles, Dave Denniston.
My name is Dave Denniston, your host, and welcome back to the latest episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. And welcome back to our monthly fireside chat with a physician to get to know their journey, their joys, and their struggles with finances, as well as outside of finances. This show, you guys, it's not always about actionable content. It is, however, a chance for you to see behind the curtains, to walk in another person's shoes, to experience their lives. And our next guest, he was kind enough to allow me to guest post on his blog, and now he's generous enough to share with us his journey and his wisdom. He's currently a radiology resident at Florida Hospital Orlando. Throughout his medical education, he's noticed a surprising lack of personal finance knowledge, which I can certainly relate to that, among young medical professionals, many of whom, of course, are so extremely bright and talented. And so he created a blog, whitecoatmoney.com. Currently, he's focusing on topics relevant to a recent medical graduate, such as loan repayment, financial organization, and you guys, I just can't wait to hear about his journey. Please help me welcome Dr. Bo Liu. Welcome, Bo.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure, my friend. You have a great blog going on there. But first, take us back. Tell us about you. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in a city called Harbin, China, and it's spelled H-A-R-B-I-N. It's the biggest city in northeast China. I think my childhood spanned the greatest transition in the Chinese economic history from kind of a more socialist economy to an almost complete Western market-based economy. It's really funny. When I think back, I remember days where money didn't mean much because you needed ration tickets to buy food. I remember watching in awe as a foreigner downed a whole bottle of Coca-Cola in front of me because I thought he had drunk a whole bottle of soy sauce.
That's awesome. Wow.
My parents were pretty highly educated, so I actually grew up in a relative privileged environment compared to my peers. For example, my house was one of the first private households to get a telephone in the city.
Oh my gosh. Wow, what a change. So as you think on your childhood, things are pretty just day to day. I mean, you know, when you're getting food coupons and stuff like that, did that change at some point? What was that like?
Yeah, it did. I'm trying to remember exactly when it happened. I think it was probably early 90s when they transitioned to the market-based economy. That's when money started mattering more than ration tickets. And I just remember, I was a kid, so I didn't have any control over food or anything. But I was never hungry or anything like that because my parents were pretty well off as far as their peers.
Hmm. And were your parents physicians at all, or what ended up leading you to medicine?
Actually, medicine. My parents were not physicians. My mother was an electrical engineer, and my father was a business person. It's actually kind of cliche, but. I've always known I was going to become a doctor. The reason for that is my grandfather, he was a traditional Chinese doctor in the countryside. He got sent to the countryside during the Mao period. When it came time to return to the city, he actually decided to stay in the village. So I remember as a kid going to his clinic and going to his home and how people would bring baskets of radishes and eggs just to pay him with that because they didn't have a lot of money. It was really great to see that and see the kind of relationship he built with people.
I got to imagine that's a big influence, people being grateful, right? I mean, he was probably a local celebrity with helping
people. Yeah, definitely. Anywhere he went, people recognized him. And, you know, if you go out with him, people are always trying to give you free things.
How fun. So I got to imagine as a little kid, what looking up to your grandpa was a huge influence. So with this background where things were tight, but better, you didn't know any different. What were your influences with money then? You know, what made your thoughts on money at that time?
Well, I didn't really have any thoughts until I went to college. I grew up in a traditionally Chinese household, which means my parents believed in saving. So, for example, when I went to college, I had saved up, I think, something like $15,000 just from working at Taco Bell. Of course, that went very quickly. Yeah, that went very quickly and all gone before the first 2 years were out. But the biggest influence I would have to say is a professor in college at a small school called Washington University in St. Louis. Professor Michael Gordonier taught a class called Intro to Personal Finance. And as a pre-med person, it was kind of one of those fun classes I wanted to take. And it was very influential. I remember specifically one day he was citing an example about how a cardiothoracic surgeon who came to him for advice. And he compared him to a squirrel and how he wasn't as smart as a squirrel. I forgot exactly how he said it, but the idea is that squirrels know to save nuts for the winter, but this cardiothoracic surgeon in his late 50s only managed to save something like $150,000 on an annual salary of $1 to $1.5 million. And that was definitely the biggest influence that class.
I got to imagine that that opened up your eyes. Now, tell me about the transition from China to the States. When did that happen?
I moved to the U.S. in 2002. My mother married my stepfather, who's an American, so I immigrated through the legal process. We went to high school, and it was a big, jarring transition at first because this, just the entire environment, everything I was used to, are completely different. As you can imagine, everywhere in China, I either walked there or took buses here. Everybody drove. When you go into school in China, my class size was 70 to 80. Here, it's something like 15 to 20. The language transition wasn't so hard because I think I came at an age where my linguistic abilities are still relatively plastic. So I was able to speak pretty well by 6 months in. But it was just all the environmental changes that are, it was quite jarring.
What do you think of China now? I mean, you look back on the time, I mean, China's changed a ton. Do you get back there? What's that been like?
I go back about once every 2 years. Most of my family are still there. It's shocking. Every 2 years I go back, it's almost like walking into a different country. It's very, very capitalistic today, probably more so than the U.S. In fact, I feel like money worship is a real problem among my people. So,
well, tell me more about that. How so? What is that like?
I think I'm not sure why. Maybe it's because there's not a lot of religious influences or other things that's kind of, you know, helping reel in the desire for greed. So, you know, almost everything that people talk about revolves about money in some way. You know, just even within my family, there's a tendency to kind of show off to one another to, you know, demonstrate how much better off you are financially compared to someone else. And it just doesn't sit very well with me, but I guess that is the corrupting influence of money.
Well, so what's your perception then now? So it sounds like, you know, you don't see money in that light. So what does money look like for you? You know, what's your perception of it?
Money is a means to get things done, to help you do things that you've always wanted to do. So I don't think wealth in itself is evil. I think is what you do with that wealth. I mean, I know we're talking during a period where the political debate is very heated right now regarding how we deal with money, but that's my personal view. I think there's no shame in becoming a rich person. It's what you do with that money that's going to decide how you're viewed.
Well, I love that attitude. I can't agree with that more. It's a tool. Interesting cultural seeing. I mean, that's just fascinating. Well, I want to take you back to, you knew from a very young time, being around your grandfather, you wanted to be a doctor. Now, you're here in the States. Did you keep on pushing towards that path of being a doctor, you know, being a pre-med major in college, or was that journey different from just driven to be a doctor?
No, I never deferred from the course. I never even had any doubts until I was actually in medical school, because I didn't realize all the negative aspects of practicing medicine in America. For example, the crisis in patient-physician relationships that we have right now, where the physician's almost viewed kind of like a glorified technician, you know, almost like a mechanic in a lot of situations. So that was a negative. Actually, I had a short period of time I considered leaving medical school and going into finances. I didn't do that.
Well, tell me about that moment. You know, when you're sounds like you were struggling with the medical environment. Where were you? You know, what was that like?
This was during third year rotations. That's, you know, long hours and hanging around very jaded residents and attendings who are feel very underpaid for the work they're doing, and also dealing with some of the stereotypical patients that are abusing the system. So that kind of put a bad taste in my mouth, and I started thinking, you know, is this what I really want to do for the rest of my life? Started looking elsewhere, looked at business, investing, engineering even. But I ended up settling because I had a lot of good physician role models who can rise above all the things we just talked about. And they're still helping. They're still making a difference. And they're mostly happy with their lives. You know, nobody can be 100% happy. I'm just working towards 80% happy.
That's good. I love that. Very good. 80% happy, at least. And obviously, going into medical school, for many folks, you know, debt is a huge part of that. And I think in some ways it really drags a lot of physicians down compared to what it was years ago with, you know, $60,000 a year at least, the cost of medical school. So tell us about that. How's debt been part of this journey for you, considering that you've been brought up as a saver?
Yeah, I could not save enough for medical school. So I did the traditional route. I came out with six figures in student loan debt. It was actually quite shocking because I left college and I had somewhat around $30,000 in student loans. And then in 1 year in medical school, I blasted right through that limit. So it was quite shocking, but I think in the end it was worth it because I get to do in my daily life things that other people would get arrested for doing.
Right. So what are you doing now to address that debt? Because I'm sure being blogging on money, you want to get rid of that as soon as possible. So tell the audience about what you've been doing to get rid of your debt.
Well, as far as my student loan debt specifically, I'm currently on income-based repayment, or IDR. It's one of the income-driven repayment plans with the Department of Education. I am doing this with the eventual goal to qualify for Public Service Loan Forgiveness, or PSLF, both of which I've blogged about extensively on my website as well. So those are the current plans.
So hoping to get it paid off in 6-7 years as you're done with residency and being a practicing doc. Are you considering anything else to get rid of those as you transition to practice eventually besides PSLF?
Yes, it depends. I think plans change. If I can find a career that will a job opportunity that allows me to stay in PSLF, that would be fantastic. If not, I will probably transition to a mode where I'm going to try to pay it off as quickly as possible. Probably involves refinancing.
I love that idea. That's always good. And I'm sure as you blogged about, many folks need to know that if you do refinance your debts through a private lender, then you no longer qualify for PSLF, right?
That's correct.
So with this dual world that you've lived in, What do you think the best piece of financial advice that you've received has been?
The best piece of financial advice, and I forgot who told me this initially. It's been said over and over again, and that is time is money. No matter what you're doing, if you're spending time, you're basically spending money on it, whether it's lost income or just actually working for money. It's time is money.
So how are you applying that advice, or how is that influencing your life?
Well, what it's caused me to do is taking a fine look at how I manage my time. And so now I structure my day based on a list of priorities. Obviously, radiology related to my career is the most important priority. And then after that, I have a list of things, the blog included, that I prefer to spend my time on.
Well, here's an interesting question about the blog. Being so busy as a resident, how are you finding time to blog?
And I'm going to answer that with another cliche, saying. Somebody once told me this. Time is like water in a sponge. If you squeeze hard enough, you always get more. So I think the truth is people always find time for things they enjoy. Fortunately for me, my hobby is blogging about personal finances and not collecting Rolexes.
Yeah, that saved you some time and some money. And as you are working on the blog, what's inspiring you, to write about? How are you coming up with your pieces?
Mostly from feedback, reader comments, talking to my colleagues and peers at work, see what things they're interested in and they don't know enough about yet. The difficult part about writing a blog post, so my goal is to keep everything very brief because I'm targeting people with very little time. So that's actually a difficult task. Some of these financial concepts are really, really hard to dumb down into something that's less than 600 words.
Give us an example. What's something that you've struggled with trying to fit in?
For example, just the PSLF, the Public Service Loan Forgiveness, it was I did two postings on that, and I don't think I've covered all the fine nuances, the terms and the little details that you need to know. But that is the problem with just kind of financial industry in general. There's a lot of complexity, and that the PSLF would be a good example.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, then the government doesn't make it any easier, in my opinion, as they come up with new things. Like one of the latest things that has come up has been the revised version of pay-as-you-earn. And so now you got income-based repayment, the regular pay-as-you-earn, and now the new pay-as-you-earn. So it doesn't get any easier, does it?
Yeah, no, it doesn't. In fact, I wrote a blog post called the Pay versus Repay, which is comparing the difference between the new plan and the old pay plan or pay-as-you-earn plan. And that's one of the most popular postings on the website currently.
So what do you think in terms of financial mistakes that you see physicians making, Bo, whether it's attendings you're talking with or other residents? What are mistakes that you've heard or you've experienced yourself?
The mistakes I see most people doing is not thinking about finances. The general attitude I get from my colleagues is that my goal is to do just medicine now, and the money will come, and I will learn how to manage it as that happens. But in real life, your work never slows down enough for you to just, okay, I'm going to sit down and all I'm going to do is learn about personal finances this next month. So that's the biggest thing is people wait. People wait to sign up for a 401k plan. People wait to buy disability insurance. People wait on all these things that you and I would take as kind of must-do items. Mm-hmm. As far as my personal biggest mistake, it has to be I cashed out my investment at the end of medical school to try to pay down my student loans.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Do you see for yourself, do you struggle at all with the fact you have this student debt and it sounds like you're obviously investing some money. Do you struggle with that decision of investing versus paying down your debt?
I think that's a constant conflict for people in my position. I do, and I did, but what I decided is to adopt a relative pay yourself first attitude. I'm sure you and your listeners have heard of pay yourself first.
Yes.
And that is what I'm doing, is I want to leverage time over almost anything else. So I'm actually relatively comfortable carrying on a large student debt balance, but while investing full steam ahead.
And what does that look like for you? Now, if you look at your financial goals, is, for example, and this is something I hear from a lot of people, they say, well, I want to buy a house. I was just talking with a physician couple yesterday, wonderful, wonderful people, and they have a couple of kids and they have a nanny, because both of them being physicians, both transitioning to practice here in June. And they're like, we just can't take this anymore. Our nanny has to sleep on the couch. We have to buy a house. And so they're looking to do it even before transitioning out of practice, because they know where they want to be, which is where they're currently at in residency. How does something like buying a house as a goal tailor into this other stuff that you're doing?
It's definitely part of my future plan, but I think I will hold off on that. I know for sure where I want to stay for at least a 5 to 10 year period of time. As you may realize, the post-medical school, immediate post-medical school period is a kind of a very nomadic time for us. We kind of move around. But the other thing is it has to be financially advantageous for me. I don't want to buy a house at the peak of the market, even if it is like a place that I think I may stay for 5 years. So there's so many factors that goes into it. You know, before that, obviously, I'd like to start a family before getting a house. So.
So for you, it sounds like that it's something you'd like to do, but it's nothing that you're planning for now at this stage of your life.
No, not unless somebody drops, you know, a deal I cannot refuse in my lap.
Absolutely. No, I think that's a good piece of advice. I think what I've seen from my end is, unfortunately, sometimes residents can have the idea, and obviously right now it's a hard time because interest rates are so low, right? I mean, you have 30-year mortgages at 3.5%, and it's incredibly tempting to buy a house. And I really think that if you don't know that this place is going to be the place that you're going to live, then my general advice to people is to hold off on that home purchase, because what if you move? As a matter of fact, I was talking to a physician couple a couple months ago where they have three houses now, and some of them are underwater because they bought one in residency, one in fellowship, and one when they transitioned out of practice. And so it's a big load, and it's a lot to manage just time-wise.
Yeah, I agree. And I think a lot of people approach it with the attitude the housing market can go nowhere but up. But I think 2008 to 2010 proved us all wrong on that. I think, you know, it's very difficult to time the market, and it's just better left alone until you know for sure.
That's great. Well, I'd like to wrap up with just a couple more questions, Bo. And whitecoatmoney.com obviously is your blog. And what should we expect to see there from you in the future in terms of some of your posts? You yourself will be transitioning to practice at some point here. What is that going to look like for you?
Well, I plan to continue to post currently about residency, mostly topics that are relevant to residents, recently graduating medical students, and soon-to-be fellows. And as I move on, I still plan to post. In fact, I'm planning to post more often because I think there's a demand for content like this. So that's the plan. And as I transition to attendingship, I will start posting about financial issues I encounter in that period of life.
Absolutely. Well, it sounds like you've done a great job of connecting and asking some of your current physician friends and whatnot to give you ideas for stuff to talk about. And I'd encourage everyone to reach out to Bo and let him know, what would you like to hear from? And he could build some content around that. Now, as you're going to be transitioning to practice, Bo, you know, what are you doing to prepare for that outside of the debt forgiveness stuff?
I am currently a little bit further away from that, so I haven't done a lot of research, but I've recently identified some resources that kind of help you start looking at what are things that you would consider in a contract, and what would be a reasonable pay, different resources. I'm about 3 years out from actually getting my first real job, so I haven't really ramped up the research on that aspect yet.
Do you have any resources that you'd like to point other physicians to outside of your blog that you think are just really awesome and they should check out?
I do. I actually have quite a few resources I use. I want to toss this one out first because it's not financially related, and it's Gomer blog. It's actually a medical satire blog, such kind of like The Onion. And it's provided me countless hours of entertainment. As far as the financial resources I use, I really like all the resources that Motley Fool provides. Dave Ramsey is a big guru on personal finance. The White Coat Investor, which is kind of my inspiration for doing what I'm doing. Mr. Money Mustache, Dough Roller. There's actually a landslide of resources out there. I think people just have to look.
Yeah, it sounds like that there's quite a few blogs there, right? You know, those are a lot of blogs. Do you have any other video resources or tools that might be helpful to people?
Yes, I love the Khan Academy, K-H-A-N. It's a fantastic website and a lot of YouTube videos regarding personal finance topics. The URL is khanacademy.org.
Okay, awesome. Well, there's so much more that we just don't have time to cover today. Do you have any closing thoughts that folks should be aware of? And how can they find you?
Folks can find me at whitecoatmoney.com, and they can connect me via Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest, all the social media portals. As far as closing thoughts, I just want all the young medical professionals out there to be mindful of their time. It's the most valuable thing we have, and be sure to spend it on something you enjoy. You know, it could be medicine. It could be blogging about personal finance in medicine, or hosting a podcast for someone who enjoys blogging about personal finance in medicine, or something else altogether, but make sure you do it with something you enjoy.
Absolutely. That's good. Well, thank you so much for being with us, Bo. And people can check you out again. That's whitecoatmoney.com, correct?
Correct. Thank you.
All right. Well, this is Dave Denniston. Thank you so much for joining us. I would love to tell your story. It would be my honor to host you on the next podcast. I know we can learn from your journey, and it will help other physicians. After all, who better to speak to doctors than another physician? I think there's going to be some awesome stuff that Bo gave for us here today. If you have any questions, make sure to contact me, dave@daviddenniston.com, or on my website, www.drfreedompodcast.com. For the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, this is Dave Denniston. Thank you so much for joining us. Make sure to check in again, subscribe. Have a good one.
Hey, this is Dave Denniston. I hope you liked today's episode. I'd love to hear your feedback. If you did like it and you want some more ideas on achieving financial freedom, visit the podcast website at www.drfreedompodcast.com. That's www.drfreedompodcast.com. And when you subscribe to my newsletter, you'll get a free copy of my ultra-popular ebook, 10 Critical Mistakes Doctors Make With Their Money. Go ahead and check out www.drfreedompodcast.com and snag a copy of your ebook now.